Congresista Darren Soto, ¿cómo está el día de hoy, caballero?
Hace una semana muy ocupado, hermano. Nosotros tuvimos asuntos de ambiente en el distrito y nosotros pasamos el proyecto de ley por igualdad por lesbianos y la comunidad gay también.
Muy bien.
En una vota histórica hoy y esta va a presentar dos proyectos de ley para ayudar a servicios de salud y Medicaid en Puerto Rico. Entonces, muchas cosas para discutir.
Tenemos muchos temas que discutir el día de hoy, pero comencemos con lo más importante, que es la zona de Osceola County. Usted fue el primero que divulgó una información sobre un vertedero de cenizas de Puerto Rico. Cenizas que aparentemente estaban en la República Dominicana y que de repente, mágicamente, llegan ahora a Osceola County. ¿Cómo te enteraste? ¿Cómo pasó esto?
Yo en el primer tiempo, yo escuché a vecinos de la comunidad de Harmony, que era Ashes, en el aire de esta comunidad. Y la persona yo hablé con en el primero era la persona quien asistió el State of the Union conmigo, Doug Lowe, un especialista de aviones en el aeropuerto de Orlando. Y yo recibí, después de hacer muchas llamadas y correo electrónico, y yo tengo preocupaciones sobre la calidad de aire y hay una posibilidad en el futuro por problemas con la agua. Entonces, y también este es parte de la jurisdicción de mi comité de comercios y energía. Entonces yo presenté una carta preguntando investigación al Departamento de Protección por Environment en el gobierno federal, y yo tuve mi asistente para comunicar un mensaje a la comisión en esta reunión en lunes. Y está obvio, ellos están preguntando para revertir este contrato. Y vamos a ver, porque hay un contrato ahora que es enforzable. Entonces,
hay un contrato es una compañía privada. Es un contrato fuera del poder de la comisión. Ahora, esta comisión, este endoso, sin ninguna vista pública, sabiendo...
Sí, este era parte de la agenda de consent, de acuerdo, y está obvio por una situación como este. Es muy importante para tener una oportunidad por el público para hablar. Y yo creo ahora ellos creen este era un error y era una sorpresa, yo creo, de muchos comisioneros que esta oposición existe, pero ¿por qué este no es collage de nuestra área, Florida Central? Y nosotros tenemos nuestros recursos de agua abajo en la tierra y con los problemas de aire, está obvio, era oposición después.
Claro. Hablemos ahora un poco en inglés para aquellas personas que no hablan mucho el español.
Sí, claro.
So we have this private contract with these two companies, and they came in without knowing ahead of time that this was going to cause a reaction from the public.
I just kind of, my thought about companies is they're going to pursue their interests. They're not really gauging public opposition or not. That's what elected officials are supposed to do.
Yeah.
So they're going to pursue their interests. They're going to try to make money. That's capitalism, and that's the American way.
Yeah.
And it's we, the elected officials, who have to be the referees and represent the public and do what's in the best interest of them. And listen, because you may not always know what's in the best interest, and you have open hearings on these things, and you make your decisions.
I agreed. Here in Orlando, here in Ochoa County, I think I got a call this morning on the radio show of the only person that went over there to the meeting. It was just one Puerto Rican that was there. He was asking us to help him out, to come out in drones in order to repeal this ashes from Puerto Rico.
Sure. Yeah, so even you know, and obviously many of us in Osceola County are Puerto Rican descent.
Yeah.
More than half the county is Hispanic, predominantly Puerto Rican. So we all deeply care about what's happening on the island and have sent donations, have traveled down there, have had our families come to the district and to that county, and we've had evacuees stay there. So, you know, there's a deep amount of support among all of us, but have polluting our environment to help is probably not one of those things you're going to see many of us support.
Exactly, exactly. There's no way around this. Another topic is Mr. Trump and this immigration plan that he just put forward just yesterday, which Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, just says, you know, dead on arrival. It's not going to happen. You don't have the votes, neither on the Senate nor the House.
No.
What do you think of this? Is this a tactic just for him to get reelected in 2020?
So, yeah, a lot of this is messaging, obviously, because we believe in both. It shouldn't be a competition between those who come in who are highly skilled versus bringing their family members in.
Exactly.
Keep in mind, the first lady came in on a visa because she was highly skilled. She was a model at the time. She married the president, and he then got her parents in under a non-merit-based system, under the family reunification system that we have in place. So his own family has benefited from the idea that there are highly skilled immigrants we want in, and we seek them out, and we have great ways for them to get in, and that could be your so-called merit-based, but I consider it's more highly skilled individuals, engineers, scientists, business people, successful business people, and willing to invest capital in the lake. But then they're not in isolation. They have family members, and most of the most highly skilled people on earth are not just going to come to the United States and leave their children behind.
By themselves, exactly.
Or their parents behind, or their brothers behind. They're eventually going to try to get others in. And the reason why they have to make it in competition between the two, because they want to keep a hard cap on immigration. They don't want it to go up. So instead of talking about the overall debate of increasing legal immigration, not illegal, legal immigration, and having comprehensive immigration reform, they want to keep the cap as is and then pit the highly skilled folks versus their own families and being able to come in. And it makes no sense when we should be lifting the cap more and making sure that the best and brightest immigrants in the world come in, but also that their families can come in too.
Right now, we're currently in a war with China, with trade wars. And just yesterday and today, Walmart announced it was going to increase your prices on products and blaming exactly this war on trade against China for this. How long is this going to go on? Because we're in the middle, and the middle class is going to pay for this.
Sure. So there's a sense that we do need to take on China in both parties because of the trade gap and because mostly because they're stealing our stuff. You know, there was I talked to a person who worked for GE who's from the district, and they had spent a decade or so working on a new jet engine that would take 40% of the fuel of existing jet engines at the time. They had a person who was of Chinese descent who had been with the company throughout that entire research. And once it was done, one day he just took a zip drive, stole it, never to be seen from again.
And went to China
with with technology they spent billions. And this is happening constantly. So we know we have to fight to stop this corporate espionage from happening and to have fairer a trade balance.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be an end game to this. There has to be a landing. And that's where a lot of us are getting worried, because Trump is not the most organized or calculated person. And they seem to be flailing around about this. And You know, the truth about trade is there were winners and losers in NAFTA. If you were in agriculture in an area that we were able to produce in large amounts, you mm-hmm. did very well. So in Florida, that's cattle and citrus, or rice or soybeans or pork or any of these other things that we produce. If we produced it big, those industries did very well. If you were more of a regional thing, other country, whether Canada or Mexico did it better, like in a higher scale, then you had problems. And our Florida fruits and vegetables took a hit, which is one of the big fights we're having right now in trade, is to give our Florida fruits and vegetables, you know, strawberries, blueberries, tomatoes, those growers the ability to make a anti-dumping objection. So, and then if you did high-grade manufacturing, like jet engines and stuff, you did very well. But if you were making toasters, you went out of business when NAFTA was inked. And if you were some of these smaller growers, you went out of business. So you had a lot of manufacturing lose. And those folks are still pissed to this day. And I mean,
well, even the farmers are fighting back now. Even the farmers that bought into this years ago when you first got elected, they're saying, listen, it's not working.
That's where I'm getting to. So the farmers who were the winners stood in solidarity in the Midwest with their brothers and sisters in steel towns that didn't do well, as far as voting for Trump and believing that NAFTA was, you know, NAFTA was a problem. And there are problems with it, without question. But now, they, who are the winners under it, are realizing these trade wars are killing them. You know, we have farmers, we had our Farm Bureau up this week, and we're a little different than some of the farming states out west in the Midwest, and that they're much more uniform. But overall, there's a concern about both trade and whether there's going to be sort of a landing on this America, U.S., Mexico, Canada agreement, and whether there's any exit strategy on the trade war, which and I'm hearing from a lot of companies on this now. So obviously, I'm closely monitoring it and certainly want to make sure that we bring this in for a landing, because tariffs are essentially taxes. It means instead of paying $200 for that TV, you're paying $250 or for any other good that you're buying. And it's not China that pays the tariffs. It's Americans that pay the tariffs. So we just got to be really careful as we're teeing up with China that we come up with an agreement to get this over with.
Let's talk about a little bit about Puerto Rico right now.
Yeah.
The bill that you introduced a couple of weeks ago. Where do you see it in a couple of months? Is it going to succeed, or you're going to use it as a means to promote the island as a colony?
So both those things. So first, we announced a bunch of co-sponsors over this past couple of weeks, both Democrats and Republicans. And probably even bigger development was that Chairman Grijalva, the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, announced he was going to hear the bill and he was going to have a hearing on status.
Good.
So, and the key is, you know, the bill may get a vote. I mean, we have 20 months to go in the term, so there's plenty of time for that stuff. It's not like a rush, like people think it is. We're working on disaster relief for Puerto Rico and had PREPA and Department of Energy and FEMA in. This last week, we dragged in the PROMESA board and got to drill them. Next week, we're going to be working on healthcare for Puerto Rico. So we're working on a lot of things. I think a lot of people get the sense we're just working on one thing when we're working on all these things at once.
What's your sense on the board, on the PROMESA board in Puerto Rico?
My sense is that we got to rein them in. Obviously, this bill passed before I was in Congress. And it's absolutely despicable that had to be the deal, because Puerto Rico was kicked out of the bankruptcy code in 1984. And the only way they could have took on this debt is if Congress either brought them, which should have been the solution.
Exactly.
Simply allowed them to declare bankruptcy again. But it was a Democratic president working with a Republican House and Senate who had close ties, the House and Senate Republicans, with the creditors, and they weren't gonna let Puerto Rico just declare bankruptcy. They required this process and this oversight, and they're overstepping their bounds. They're talking about different spending items in the budget, and they shouldn't be doing that. They should be just determining the total figure of the budget and then letting the Puerto Rico legislature work together to come up with what that should be. And they shouldn't be weighing in on those things than they are. In addition, obviously, we're concerned about the spending that they're doing as an office, and we are working on having an independent audit. Probably the biggest thing to come out of the PROMESA hearing for me is that the governor does not object to an audit, and the PROMESA board does not object to an independent audit either. Those are the two parties that have to say yes. So we're hoping that we can get just either the committee or one of our federal agencies to do an audit, or if there's a nonprofit that's interested in doing an audit where, you know, that has the funds to be able to do it. Because we would like to give all the public reassurance that, you know, what debts that are being challenged and why are the best deal that Puerto Rico can get. And if not, we should have an independent way to verify that. So that's where we're at right now.
I think one of our fears is the fact that, for example, just yesterday was announced that the board wants to cut retirement funds for the employees of the government.
Sure.
We're talking about people that made $1,000 a month.
Course.
I mean, that'll be almost $700 a month that they would lose in a year, I should say, in a year. Also, the electric company said that 28% increase in the electricity bill, which now stands at 22 cents per kilowatt hour. So it is making the island so expensive that are driving people away, because the ticket to get out is a lot cheaper than the solutions they're giving us.
So on both those issues, Those things came up. We want to do a bill that carves out and protects pensions in the University of Puerto Rico as a more priority status, you know, and we'll get it passed through the House. It's just whether the Senate actually takes it up. And I do want to mention, do you know that the Senate has not voted on legislation on the floor of that chamber in over 2 months?
On what chamber? In Puerto Rico or?
On anything. It's been 2 months since the U.S. Senate has voted on legislation.
Oh, you're talking about the U.S. Senate?
Yeah. So
they have gone for 2 months without making a law?
2 months without even having a vote. So all they're doing is voting on judges right now. So for 2 months, we're working hard. We're passing all these things. And you hear the president running off at his mouth. And it's important for everybody to know at home, the Senate isn't doing anything. They are literally doing nothing other than working on judges. So they're not passing any bills. They're not doing anything. Anyway, I just bring that up because all these things that we're talking about, they have to pass for them to have a chance to become law. Going to the rise in energy prices. So, you know, we're really working hard to try to have a nice transition to cleaner energy in Puerto Rico and eventually 100% renewable. So one of the big things that came out in the disaster relief hearing was that even though we allocated $2 billion to upgrade the grid over in February of 2018, to date, the Department of Energy has not sent out a request for proposal to PREPA. And so when $900 million of that is going to fund the renewable work that's going to be done on the island, and they still haven't had a request for proposal, it's just delaying and delaying and more delaying. And that's one of the things killing us, because we want to get off of coal, off of oil, use natural gas as a transition fuel while boosting renewables. And eventually by, I believe they said 2050, they want to be at 100% renewable, and we want to help them get there. But, you know, the Department of Energy deputy secretary came to our committee, and he was just like, they're sitting on their hands. And it comes back to the president just fighting everything tooth and nail. Even the money we've already allocated, we allocated $41 billion. Puerto Rico's got 11 billion of it so far, and he keeps going around the country lying and saying Puerto Rico got $91 billion.
Exactly,
which everybody has said is a lie. Every news report, everybody, that's the total damages, and I suspect it's even more than that.
I do too.
So we get stuck in this situation where the biggest power we have is the oversight right now, dragging these folks in, grilling them on everything. And then we really need anybody who's listening to this. Well, I mean, we need to put pressure on the Senate. Scott Rand saying he was some buddy of the Puerto Ricans. And, you know, if he is, which I doubt, then he needs the help, and Rubio too. So, you know, obviously these are concerns of mine, but eventually, obviously with gas and then renewables and microgrids, gas is cheaper than oil and coal. So the hope is that that will help lower the overall costs. The oil part comes back to its Puerto Rico's old relationship with Venezuela, which obviously that's a disaster now. So we're working on these things. And one thing I'd encourage everybody to do each week when we have these committee meetings, I put my my questioning, the videos online. So if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about on your show, which is the video of me grilling these guys from PREPA and Department of Energy, or the video of me confronting Jurescu of the Junta Fiscal. And next week we'll be working on the healthcare issues. And specifically what I'm working on is a Medicaid parity bill that would give Puerto Rico the same Medicaid match that a state would get, which would be 83%. Right now it's a 45-55 split.
Yeah.
And that's led to every 2 years we have to try to come up with $4 billion so that Puerto Rico avoids the quote-unquote Medicaid cliff. So I have a bill to do that that will be filing soon. And I have another bill to allow for Puerto Rico to be part of the Affordable Care Act exchanges, that would, because only 30% of Puerto Ricans on the island have private insurance. So we need to kick that figure up and get more people covered. So those are two things that I'll be personally working on, because not only does it relate to the stuff I'm working on in natural resources, but actually goes through my main committee, Energy and Commerce, one of the three exclusive committees in commerce. And we deal with pretty much all the healthcare, environment, energy, business, internet and tech, communications, ton of stuff. So
it is sad that you told me that the Senate hasn't done anything. You know how many times I heard Rick Scott and Marco Rubio that they ate mofongo, and mofongo here, mofongo there, and you could have sworn they were Boricuas. And now when the time comes for them to prove it, they haven't done anything yet. They're friends with the president. How come Rick Scott hasn't told? Listen, that's a lie. They haven't received $91 billion. Stop saying
right.
that.
Right. So what you can do to help is you and your listeners can continue to tell the Senate, hey, why don't you start doing stuff? Because it literally has been 2 months since they voted on legislation on the
floor. That's unbelievable.
It is outrageous. And sometimes when you're quiet, people forget about you and you fly under the radar. We cannot let them fly under the radar, because everything that I'm talking about to help Puerto Rico has to also pass the Senate. So if they do nothing, all this work is for nothing. So I appreciate being on the show, Fernando, as always.
Thank you so much.
And
mi hermano congresista Darren Soto.
Sí, es mi honor. A siempre, hermano. Hasta luego.
Un abrazo. Hasta luego.
Igual.